Everybody, Mike Malloy here. Thanks for tuning in. This is Earth Day, huh? Okay. As promised, tonight we're going to start the program. We have a lot of stuff to cover tonight, and but I wanted to start the program with what I promised. It's a two-parter written by Bob Alexander. The first part we're going to share with you tonight, the second part tomorrow night. And it's rather quick, but I'd like you to hear this, especially if you are a cigarette smoker. All right? Okay, here we go. Hey, Mike, if you were to Google, what's the best way to quit smoking? One of the top entries is a Time magazine interview with Dr. Michael Fiore, a professor of medicine at the University of Wisconsin School of Medicine, an expert in smoking cessation, and founder of the School Center for Tobacco Research and Intervention. The interview begins this way. Time. How can people know what the most effective methods are to help you quit smoking? Fiore. The good news is that the United States Public Health Services have reviewed the scientific literature on ways to quit smoking and has incredibly, thoroughly, systematically, and impartially analyzed those methods. They actually reviewed more than 8,000 scientific articles, and they pulled them together to give what are called meta-analytical results. So not just one single story or one anecdotal report, but rather the whole body of research on the most effective ways to quit smoking, end quote. Dr. Fiore then goes on to explain the three core components to successfully quitting. First, find a good counselor as a coach. Second, systematically identify smokers when they visit health clinics. Have a system in place in those clinics to help them quit. And bring up quitting smoking each time they visit. And the third scientifically proven therapy is to use either nicotine replacement in the form of the gum patch, lozenge, nasal spray, or inhaler, or the use of the prescription drugs Zyban or Chantix. The recommended course of therapy lasts anywhere from 8 weeks to 6 months. There is no mention in the article of how much 8 weeks to 6 months of treatment could cost or what the actual success rate would be if one were to follow Dr. Fiore's guidelines. Well, I've been to counselors. I've been identified as a smoker and nagged at by my doctor. I've tried the patch and the gum. My own personal best is a 100% failure rate at quitting smoking using those methods. I started smoking cigarettes 44 years ago. I rapidly became a pack-a-day guy. The first time I tried to quit was 36 years ago. Not only have I tried the patch and the gum, I've gone on a special diet, bought a couple of gizmos that were supposed to help me quit, tried acupuncture and acupressure, and ended up spending $400 on a hypnotist for the most expensive naps I've ever had. I didn't try the drugs because Zyban side effects may include anxiety, constipation, diarrhea, dizziness, drowsiness, headache, nausea, stomach pain, insomnia, vomiting, and the ever-popular impotence. The warnings on Chantix describe serious neuropsychiatric events, including but not limited to depression, suicidal ideation, suicide attempt, and completed suicide that have been reported in patients taking the drug. Though suicide is one of the most effective ways to quit smoking, I was looking for a more positive outcome. When I first started smoking, I thought I was bulletproof. Later, I was delusional enough to think that the heart attack, stroke, emphysema, lung cancer deal would happen to someone else. I now have an age where I can definitely aware of my own mortality. And I don't want to check out any sooner than I have to. I started chewing the gum again last September. Nicorette had a new flavor, Cinnamon Surge. I had previously tried their Mint Tile Grout flavor. Cinnamon Tile Grout tasted much better. Nicorette's ad campaign says, "Quitting smoking sucks a lot. Make quitting suck less with Nicorette." Since September, every waking hour sucked. But with Nicorette, it didn't suck as much as it could have. Who freaking Ray? Then one day, I was listening to the radio when a commercial caught my attention. It was about an electronic or e-cigarette. According to the announcer, it feels and tastes just like smoking a cigarette, but since you are only inhaling and exhaling water vapor, no harmful anything. I wrote down the 800 number, and before I called, I went Googling for product reviews on that particular brand of e-cig, and I found them. All bad. But the idea of an e-cigarette was compelling enough to Google further. After reading a product review of a company on an e-cigarette forum, I decided to give it a try. I ordered the starter kit on March 3rd, and it arrived on the 6th. I put the e-cig together, took a drag, exhaled, took another, exhaled, and immediately knew that this was not going to be a replay of the patch or the gum. This was different. It felt like smoking, tasted better than smoking, but without tobacco or combustion products, thereby eliminating virtually all of the health hazards associated with smoking. And no secondhand smoke worries because there's no smoke to begin with. An e-cigarette, slightly longer than a regular cigarette, consists of a cartridge containing a heating element and nicotine liquid attached to a battery. The e-liquid comes in a variety of nicotine strengths and flavors. I prefer the tobacco flavors, while my sister likes the cappuccino. When you take a drag, you inhale the vapor created when the element heats the liquid. What you exhale looks like smoke, but it's just water vapor. It's been over 6 weeks now, and I haven't wanted or smoked a cigarette. My lungs are healing, and I've saved over $300 by not buying and smoking 1,000 cigarettes. The price of the starter kit is $45.90. My new habit costs about $25 a month. You don't need a calculator to do that kind of math. After a few days of vaping instead of smoking, it was time to get evangelical and call everybody I knew who smoked and tell them about my e-cig experience. They all ordered one, and everybody quit smoking the day their kit arrived in the mail. I'm talking about people who've smoked anywhere from 30 to 55 years and quitting effortlessly. It's one of the most amazing things I've ever witnessed. As far as I'm concerned, the greatest invention in the history of mankind are fire, the wheel, disposable diapers, and e-cigarettes. After the initial giddiness of quitting smoking without going insane died down somewhat, I looked further into the big question on everyone's mind, which is, how safe are these things? I first talked to Dr. Vapor, as he is known on YouTube and the e-cig forums. He uses e-cigs and has prescribed them for his patients. According to the studies he's researched, using e-cigs for 40 years is less harmful to the body than smoking for 30 days. Professor Carl Phillips, the University of Alberta School of Public Health, where much of his research focuses on tobacco harm reduction, said in an interview, "The health benefits of switching from smoking tobacco cigarettes are almost exactly the same as the health benefits of quitting. And this applies to electronic cigarettes, smokeless tobacco, and pharmaceutical nicotine. If a smoker can manage to switch from smoking to one of those other products, the benefits are approximately the same as quitting. They lower their cancer risk. They lower their cardiovascular disease risk. They get rid of acute symptoms of lung and airway problems, a risk that comes from smoking for pulmonary diseases, and so forth. Switching is so close, as good as quitting, that from a health point of view, there is no point in worrying about the difference." More in a moment.
Puff, 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 but if you smoke yourself to death, tell St. Peter at the Golden Gate, you hate to make him wait. You've got to have another cigarette. Chuck Thompson. In a game of chance the other night, old Dame Fortune was doing me right. The kings and queens just kept on coming around. Well, I got a full and I bet it high, but my bluff didn't work on a certain guy. He just kept on raising and chunking that long green down. He'd
come to paradise.
Radio right from the left. It's More Mike Malloy.
21 past the hour. We're just about finished with this first part of an essay that Bob Alexander wrote. It's a two-parter, first half tonight, second half tomorrow night, about this e-cigarette product that he found. Bob Alexander's been a smoker, as you probably heard if you're listening, for 44 years, and he has stopped. Back to the essay. We all know the statistics. Cigarette smoking is the most preventable cause of illness and death in the United States. Every 8 seconds, someone dies from smoking. Quitting is hard, and 75% of those who quit relapse. The success rate for quitting using the patch or the gum is around 7%. E-cigarettes are a safe and effective way to effortlessly switch from smoking. I've personally experienced it. All my smoking friends have quit. And you can read scores of testimonials from ex-smokers on the e-cig forums. Now, who in the world would be against e-cigs? Oh, the usual suspects, big tobacco and big pharma. That makes sense. I'm certainly not going to be buying packs of Marlboros or boxes of gum or patches anymore. But the American Lung Association, anti-smoking groups, some state governments, and the U.S. Food and Drug Administration all want to ban e-cigarettes. What do all these groups have in common? Let's just say that they're not really concerned about your health. And like everything else, it all has to do with money. And I'll get into that next time. Regards, Bob. Now, if you are a smoker and you were listening to this, tomorrow, part two is the kicker, so to speak. And if you want to jump ahead, if you want to jump ahead, jump out of line and push to the head of the line, you can go to his website, superbeans.com/quitting. Superbeans.com/quitting. As you know, he's in the coffee business. Superbeans.com/quitting. When he first told me about this product, now, you know, like I said, I'm in that 7% that managed after the 47th attempt to quit smoking using gum in the patch. And, you know, it was what it was, the experience. But what Bob is talking about is something that I think, just for the sheer hell of it, every single cigarette smoker, unless you really enjoy smoking and enjoy shortening your life. Now, if you like that, I know, not everybody, 90% of cigarette smokers do not get lung cancer. You're right, they don't. They get bladder cancer, pancreatic cancer, emphysema, COPD, brain tumors, athlete's foot, stinky breath, and clothes that smell like the person sleeping or walking around them just got up from sleeping overnight in a flop house. So not everyone gets lung cancer. You're right. But I have never met a smoker, me personally. I can't speak for Bob. I've never met a smoker who didn't want to quit. Christ, I wanted to quit for 30 years. I wanted to quit. Especially after I found out that the evil bastards who run the tobacco industries were manipulating the nicotine content to keep me hooked forever until I died, gasping for breath. Now, I'm not going to give you a lecture on smoking. It's your body. It's your trip. It's your karma. It's your wheel. You know, whatever it is, it's all urine. But, you know, if you spent your entire life walking, every place you go, walking, and somebody comes by one day and says, look at this, what is that? Well, watch. And the person just, I don't know, goes down the road, comes back. What is that? It's called a bicycle. Oh, never mind. I'll keep walking. Walking. It's a bicycle. You get there faster. Everything's faster. So that may be what Bob's talking about here. And like he said, the first one he tried, or the first ad that he heard and he tried it was, you know, it sucked. It was ridiculous. It made no sense. And I'm afraid that's what happens to a lot of people with this thing. So anyway, tomorrow night, part two, the punchline. In the meantime, go to superbeans.com/quitting if you want to get some more information. And no, neither one of us are involved in this business. This is just, you know, this is what Bob told me. He said, you know, I don't know what to do about this because I'm not involved in it. Can't sell it. Don't want to get involved. I said, well, me either. I have nothing to do with this. You're the one who brought it to me. He said, I don't know. Just let me write about it because this has to do with personal experience. Okay. So that's what we're doing. All right. When we come back, we're going to talk about a number of things, not the least of which is Barack Obama's scolding of the financial services industry today.
Listening to Resistance Radio with Mike Malloy.
Before the hour. If you're curious about what Bob was writing about, go to his website. Don't email me because I don't have any information here. Go to superbeans.com/quitting and part two tomorrow night. Interesting stuff. It is to me anyway. You know, I listened to Barack Obama's chastisement of the titans of the financial services industry today at Cooper Union in Manhattan. Yeah, I watched the whole thing. It was my turn to mop the floors in the kitchen and the dining room. So gave me something to listen to and watch when I would float in and out of the kitchen where I had a bucket of Murphy soap and water. And, you know, once again, as he talked, I thought, wow, you know, this man really knows how to put together a nice speech. Talks good. Talks better than any president in my time, except maybe Ronald Reagan. But, you know, as I listened to what Obama was saying, I kept thinking to myself, what are the baggers and the Republicans and the conservatives and the Fox viewers doing while, you know, while he's speaking? The ones who are watching and listening. Because number one, I'm sure they couldn't understand the thing he was saying. And number two, they're probably sitting there on their well-padded asses while Obama was giving his chastising talk and saying to themselves, yeah, but where's your birth certificate? Right? Because they are such doofuses. Well, I thought about that, you know, for maybe 5 minutes and chuckled and went back to mopping the floor. But then, you know, later on today, I started thinking, I hate to be the skunk at the picnic. But what did Barack Obama say today? He, he urged Goldman Sachs top leaders and other bandits, scum, committers of fraud. That room was filled with people who have been instrumental in ending the lives of hundreds of thousands, if not millions of people in this country. They didn't kill them, but they have put them into such financial horror that they'll never recover. This is just like what the Republican bastards did, including one of the Bush brothers, during the savings and loan debacle in the 80s. Here it is. Yeah, it's all over again. Here it is. But as I was listening to Obama today in that room full of scum, swine, killers, destroyers of whatever dreams people may still have in this country, whatever realities they had. You know, I listened to Obama and I watched the thugs sitting in that room politely applauding when the applause lines came. And I thought, you know, how many families have those bastards destroyed? How many families out there now will not be able to send their children to college? How many families have lost their homes or on the verge of losing their homes? How many families have seen their 401ks turn into mush? How many families have watched everything taken away from them? Because of these predatory vampires sitting in that room with Barack Obama today while he issued a bunch of toothless platitudes about what they should do. And I couldn't believe it. Someone half listening would say, hey, who's that? Well, that's the president. Oh, yeah, who's he talking to? Oh, those bank bastards. Wow, man, he's really giving old Billy hell, isn't he? No, he wasn't. Obama urged these thugs, these highwaymen, these criminals to work with him, to work with him in passing the financial reform bill currently pending in the Senate. Have you read that? Have you seen a synopsis of it? Are you aware that there is no effective enforcement? These bastards can't go to jail. They can't be dismantled. They can't be stopped. Here's Barack Obama again asking for cooperation. He said, one of his comments, ultimately there is no dividing line between Main Street and Wall Street. We rise or fall together as one nation. Really? Is that what is going on? Well, while unemployment in this country is around 18%, while people have lost millions of jobs and these predatory bastards on Wall Street have made billions, Mr. Obama, look at the first quarter profit being reported by these people. Look at how much was set aside for bonuses. Look at their paychecks. And then you're going to tell us that we rise and fall together? And that's when I about lost it. Just completely. There's my president. There he is. Now, in the meantime, the dumbass Republicans and conservatives and teabaggers and Newt Gingrich suckers and the rest of these swine and Boehner and Mitch McConnell and the rest of these people, Republicans in the Senate, talking about, well, you know, let's go back to the table and redo and blah, 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 blah. You know, speaking the usual right-wing gibberish nonsense that these pigs always speak, which renders them totally superfluous. It doesn't matter. This bill that's in the Senate will pass. And then what? He went on to say, I urge you to do so. Join in seeking to pass these common sense reforms. I urge you to do so, not only because it is in the interest of your industry, because it is in the interests of our country. The interests of our country. Compare that or contrast it to another presidential address to financial executives in New York, a few years removed from a similar financial crisis, this president said, quote, "We had to struggle with the old enemies of peace. Business and financial monopoly, speculation, reckless banking, class antagonism, sectionalism, war profiteering. They had begun to consider the government of the United States as a mere appendage to their own affairs. We know now that government by organized money is just as dangerous as government by organized mob. Never before in all our history have these forces been so united against one candidate as they stand today. They are unanimous in their hate for me, and I welcome their hatred." End quote. Yeah, that was Roosevelt. In a 1936 speech, he was running for re-election. "We had to struggle with the old enemies of peace. Business and financial monopoly, business speculation, reckless banking, class antagonism, war profiteering." What did Barack Obama say today? "Ultimately, there is no dividing line between Main Street and Wall Street. We rise or fall together as one nation, so I urge you to join me. to join those who are seeking to pass these common sense reforms. And I urge you to do so not only because it is in the interest of your industry, but because it's in the interest of our country." And they applauded. And Obama looked like a stern college professor addressing a bunch of unruly, dope-smoking students. "It is essential," the president said, "that we learn the lessons of this crisis so we don't doom ourselves to repeat it." Blah, 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 blah. You know, I think Barack Obama's a nice guy. He certainly has made history. But what he's talking about here is forming a partnership with the people who have raped and pillaged the country. Forming a partnership with the people who have destroyed not only our economic system, as shaky as it was to begin with, but has had an effect on the economic systems of what, 40, 70, 100 other countries? And our president wants to make nice with these bastards?
Look at them yo-yos, that's the way you do it. Play the guitar on the MTV. That ain't working, that's the way you do it. Money for nothing and your chicks for free. Now that ain't working, that's the way you do it. Let me tell you, damn guys ain't dumb. Maybe get a blister on your little finger. Maybe get a blister on your thumb.
Right. From the left, it's more Mike Malloy.
It's about 10 before the hour. Let me play a couple of quotes from Obama's Cooper Union speech today. In this one, he gives a background on the economic crisis and what he's done to foster some recovery.
Since I last spoke here 2 years ago, our country has been through a terrible trial. More than 8 million people have lost their jobs. Countless small businesses have had to shut their doors. Trillions of dollars in savings have been lost, forcing seniors to put off retirement, young people to postpone college, entrepreneurs to give up on the dream of starting a company. And as a nation, we were forced to take unprecedented steps to rescue the financial system and the broader economy. And as a result of the decisions we made, some of which, let's face it, were very unpopular, we are seeing hopeful signs. A little more than 1 year ago, we were losing an average of 750,000 jobs each month. Today, America is adding jobs again. 1 year ago, the economy was shrinking rapidly. Today, the economy is growing. In fact, we've seen the fastest turnaround in growth in nearly three decades.
And the predators, the vampires sitting in the audience listening to him, were so happy to hear that. That's wonderful, Mr. President. That's wonderful. You're not blaming us. You're talking in generalities, and you just said it, Mr. President. Gosh, things almost crashed and burned. But you, Mr. President, were instrumental, you and your predecessor, in bailing us out. And Mr. President, we're doing it again. So we love it, Mr. President. Keep talking. Especially that part about today America is adding jobs again. We like that. Yeah. Obama said as a nation we were forced to take unprecedented steps to rescue the financial system and the broader economy. To rescue them? But that's not the way capitalism is supposed to work. That's not the invisible hand of the free market. That's not the way it's supposed to work. But Mr. President, hi, my name is Mike Malloy. And about 20 years ago, I had a small business fail. It was one of the times between my radio jobs and I got into this telemarketing thing and I wound up deeply in debt and owing the IRS about $16,000. It just took me forever to pay it off. And you know what, Mr. President? There was nobody there. Nobody to rescue me. Seven past the hour. We do not have Laura on the phone, so we'll see if she is just otherwise detained or busy or forgot about us. Oh, Laura. Meanwhile, back to the education crisis that we're facing here. According to Arne Duncan, it's an education crisis, meltdown, disaster. Now, this is the same guy who said that the best thing that happened to the education system in New Orleans was Hurricane Katrina. He did. It was in the Washington Post interview. Because it forced that community to take steps to improve low-performing public schools. So what we have here is another purveyor of disaster capitalism and a guy who applauds the shock doctrine policy. And he's now Barack Obama's Secretary of Education. In addition, you know, he was in the he was the head of the Chicago school system, right? For how long? 6 or 7 years? 8 years? I've got it here. 8 years. During that time, Chicago Public Schools, from 2001 to 2009, during that time, Chicago Public Schools' fourth grade math scores slowly rose from 214 to 222. That's over an 8 year period, out of 500, or 8 points. Now, that sort of testing, that is not the sort of testing that is designed simply to make sure that school districts continue to get No Child Left Behind money. Those are actual tests about how are the kids doing. Miami, Houston, New York had higher scores than Chicago on the National Assessment of Education Progress. Boston, San Diego, and Atlanta had bigger gains. So it looks like Arnie Duncan is maybe not the guy for the job. The best thing that happened to the New Orleans public school system was Hurricane Katrina. Don't you just feel little twinges in your gut when you hear the Secretary of Education, for example, in this case, say something like that? Email here from June. Mike, I'm a retired professor of education, 40 years experience in the field, 5 years teaching kindergarten in public schools, and two of those were in a ghetto school in Houston. My great concern was how best to teach the children. Even back in the 60s, we realized that the most effective thing we could do was lower the student-teacher ratio, especially in the low-income deprived communities. When Lady Bird and LBJ declared war on poverty in 1964 or so, Congress allocated great sums of money to research what we could do. The research showed clearly that smaller classes were one of the most effective things educators could do. Quality teachers also helped. And one of the most important things was to begin early. What is learned first is the longest lasting knowledge. So early education is the most critical time. We have seen decades now of people who are not trained in pedagogy making decisions on what to teach and how to teach it. What works in business is not the most effective way to manage education. We saw Texas schools make serious declines after the recommendations of Ross Perot were implemented. Then Reagan cut funds, especially for early education programs. Here in Texas, we got the influence of George W. Bush, which increased the testing and decreased the efficiency. The dumbing down of America is in full swing. Dr. June and her last name, and thanks, June, for writing. Hi. And this comes from Ray in Arizona. Mike, tonight you're getting close, quite close, to the truth regarding public education, but let me get you closer. When there were separate but equal educational systems neatly wrapped inside American apartheid, it mattered little how great or puny a school district's scholastic level of achievement was. A white man could and did ignore a black man's qualifications and keep career positions and union jobs among whites. Once American apartheid was dismantled, per the enlightened decisions of the U.S. Supreme Court in a moment of social and political lucidity in the 60s, it was necessary for the powerful to blow up the public school system, to limit the dilution in the workforce, and to maintain complete control. Welcome to post-racial America. Ray in Arizona. Yeah, that too, huh? It's pretty astonishing to me to all of a sudden, and I say all of a sudden because apparently I haven't paid too much attention to this. We're paying attention to it now because we have a kid, Kathy and I, about to enter first grade in the public school system in Georgia. And it's been an absolute, I want to say, mind F, but I'm not allowed to say that on the radio. It has been quite an interesting experience. The first 3 years of Molly's education, preschool and kindergarten, was at a school that, you know, I wish we could just continue in forever, run by a Presbyterian church. Yeah, then that make you think, what the hell is he saying? A Presbyterian church? No, it wasn't religious education. But I wish that we could continue with that group forever because they're that good. But such is not the case. And it was very cheap. I think it cost us like $300 a month, you know. You can't get babysitting for that, right? So now Molly starts first grade into the public school system here in Georgia. And the schools that are closest to us are all being closed. So we've had to take advantage of a bill or a law passed a year or so ago in the Georgia legislature that was designed to, it had racist undertones to it. Anything that happens in the old Confederacy, I don't care where it happens. If it's one of the old Confederate states, one of the old states here in the South, it does have racist overtones. It has an appearance of, oh, well, we're going to try to educate all the little children. No, you're not, you lying bastards. But the Georgia General Assembly passed a bill that would allow parents to transfer their children to a better school if certain conditions were prevalent that the parents felt required to transfer. And it was designed, again, it was designed to aid and assist white people to get their children out of failing schools. What they didn't consider was the fact that schools were going to close. So the schools closest to us are closing. The elementary schools are closing. They're closing in June. I don't know where the teachers are going to go. I don't know where all the people who work in these schools are going to go, but they're closing. And this is just one county. Next year, they're talking about closing seven more elementary schools. Where are children to be educated? So we are trying, or we have tried, to do one of two things. Either tuition Molly into a different public school system. That's right, tuition into a different public school system. Or get her a transfer to another school within the system in the county that we live in. And it's been a battle. I think about, and I'm sorry, this is going to be one of those Grand Torino, you kids get off my lawn moments, but I can't help it. The public education that I got, and I never went to private school, I always went to public schools, was phenomenal. When I think back on the public education I got in elementary school and then high school, secondary school, and the subjects that we learned and the depth of discussion, the science, the math, the foreign language, these were all required. And again, I understand I was being tracked just like all the kids in my cohort were being tracked. Some, I mentioned this the other night, some of us into academic studies, some of us into non-academic studies. So, I understand the viciousness in the school system back in the 40s and 50s and even 60s. But the education I did get that was a public school education compared to what's available now, plus the fact that we had mandatory phys ed, art, and music. Had to have it. And I look what's available now, and it's heartbreaking. It's infuriating. It's not just heartbreaking. I want to sit around and cry about it. I want to break somebody's face about it. You know what I'm saying?
Let's start with something simple, like one and one ain't three. And two plus two will never get you five. There's fractions and my subtraction, and X don't equal Y. But my homework is bound to multiply.
Hey, truth seekers, it's time for your humble and obedient servant, Mike Malloy.
21 past the hour, and how quickly the public school system in this country, the financing for it, has disappeared, has dried up. I guess there are too many people of color, you know, too many immigrants, too many this, too many that, and you know, what self-respecting middle class or teabagger type white family wants to support illegal immigrants or brown people or Asian people or, you know what I'm saying? Or am I putting too much emphasis on it? I don't think so. I live here in the South, so that does color my, so to speak, point of view. But I know how it works in the rest of the country too. Racism does factor in here. It does. It just does. The other factor is priorities. what kind of a nation doesn't place education of its children as the number one priority? Seriously, other than us, who else does this? What other country spends more on bombs and tanks and cluster bombs and landmines and poison gas and depleted uranium than they spend on educating their 5 and 6 and 7 and 10 and 12-year-olds? Huh? What country does that? I'll tell you what country does that. A country that is dying. A country that is smelling its own stink as it starts to rot. That's the country that does that. That's us. That's the United States of, by God, America. Now, the right-wingers will tell you, hey, government schools, they just teach you garbage. Go to religious school. Yeah, that's what the Taliban says, or the, you know, fundamental religionists. I don't care if they're Jewish or Christian, or Islam or, Hindu. That's right. Educate your little darlings in religious schools. That'll help. That'll advance the human race, won't it? That will develop science and technology in an attempt to, undo the damage we've done over the past 150 years to the environment, or help us try to escape this little green glob that's about to implode anyway, or whatever. Nah, teach him about sky spooks. Teach them about arguing about little fine points in Torah. Teach them about how many incarnations it takes before they escape the wheel of birth and death. Teach them about the 72 virgins waiting if they just go blow up a Christian. Or whatever. Teach them about the rapture. Well, don't worry about anything. You don't have to get educated. You don't have to educate the kids because, you know, Jesus is coming. And we're all going to rapture up to heaven. Yeah, teach him some fundamentalist religious crap. That'll help. I get too pissed off about this, I guess. You know, I really do. I've got adult children who have children. And all the kids in our family, with the exception of my long-dead father, who was educated at a private Jesuit school, but all the people in my family went through public education system. My son, my daughters, their kids, their spouses. How much longer before it's not even going to exist? And these are kids who all got good educations. I don't think any of my children or grandchildren. And I worry about Molly because here comes Molly now, you know, on the tail end of this madness. I don't think any of my kids were not exposed to an excellent public school education. Of course, my youngest, up from Molly, is now 31. So this really strikes home with me. I think about the public education I got and people in my generation, what we got. I think about what my older adult children, my younger adult children, what kind of a public education they got. And then I take a look at what is going on now. City after city, school district after school district over the years. No, defeated. How many times were millage rates defeated that would be targeted exclusively for public education, public schools? How many times did people say, oh, no, I ain't paying no more taxes. What are they teaching them in school? Music? Art? Hog's not. I didn't have art. No, of course you didn't. Study after study indicates that kids that have music appreciation do better in math. Yeah, it's not. It's a direct cause and effect. It's not. What was the term we were discussing the other day? A cause and correlation. No, was that what it was? Yeah, it's not. Yeah, correlation versus what? Causation. It's not that. cause and effect. You put a kid into music appreciation starting when he or she is 4 years old. By the time that kid isn't, and do it every year, by the time that kid, and you know, when the kid gets a little bit older, can handle an instrument, start teaching him or her how to read music, meter, scale, so on and so forth. By the time that kid gets into third, fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh grade, you have a child who perfectly understands math concepts. But no, let's get rid of music. What the hell's that about? We'll be back after the break.
Born in Germany and in France, and someday I might get my chance. And that's what I learned in school today. That's what I learned in school. And what did you learn in school today, dear little boy of mine? What did you learn in school today, dear little boy of mine? I learned our government must be strong. It's always right and never wrong. Our leaders are the finest men, and we elect them again and again. And that's what I learned in school today. That's what I learned in school.
Coast to Coast, The Mike Malloy Show. All substance, no abuse.
It's about 25 before the hour. From Roz in Canada. Hi, Mike. Like I said in an earlier email to you, it's back to the dark ages for Americans and the rest of us too, no doubt. Nothing cultural being offered in school. How can war toys be more important than schools and hospitals? We will all be raising a generation of trolls in the future, fodder for the service industry, jobs in the mines. It can be stopped if people wake up now, but as long as you have wingnuts like the mentally slow right, well, the job will be made that much harder. Canada is following in the footsteps of the States at a rapid pace. We will continue doing so as long as we have Stephen Harper as Prime Minister. He is not an original thinker and replaced Blair as the U.S. President's lapdog, and so it goes. Roz. Robert is in Denver, listening on XM. Hey, Robert.
Hey, Mike, how you doing?
I'm all right. How are you?
Oh, well, it's not like you're pretty excited tonight, Mike.
Yeah, other than being lied into a war, I think, makes me angrier than to understand that our education system is not the top priority in this country.
Yeah, you know, you mentioned that, you went through the public schools, and so did I. I noticed that when I graduated way, way back in 67 from high school.
Mm-hmm.
And then I went in the Marine Corps, and then I started hearing things like they stopped having chess clubs.
Right.
You know, I'm originally from St. Louis. They stopped having chess clubs, and they stopped having, the girls' softball team, the freshman softball team, they were cutting those things out. And I wonder what was this going to? What was the reason? And this might be far-fetched. This is, you know, I might be thinking out of my head. But could it be that the private sector saw an opportunity to start something years and years and years ago to get some of the public funds over to the private sector? You know, like schools and even if you're working on a job, there were some jobs that were saying, oh, this is going to be a private sector job from now on. Rather than
well, yeah, absolutely. You're not thinking, as you said, out of your head. This is for real. This has been going on. The privatization of everything, even down to the point where the U.S. government now hires private organizations to conduct our torture, private organizations to bodyguard our invading diplomats who, after the Marines have landed, our diplomats go in and set up whatever kind of operation is necessary to subdue the indigenous population. And those people are no longer guarded by the Marines. The Marines are needed to go out and fight, I don't know, whoever it is we're fighting. So, yeah, we've the idea of privatizing everything we can privatize, water systems, utility companies, education, war fighting, everything is being privatized, of course, because, and that is the goal of corporate America in this case, but corporate anything. That's the goal of capitalism. Nothing should remain as part of the public domain. Yeah, because anything that's part of the public domain or is run by the people, for the people, of the people is obviously socialist and communist. Thanks, Robert. Appreciate your checking in. Yes, it's madness. Even religion's being privatized too, isn't it? Right. All you have to do is just look, watch the television sometime during the day. I've spent some time doing that in the past couple weeks with this damn allergy cough because I can't go outside. Oh my God! But some of these religious freaks, monsters, murderers, killers, soul suckers that are on television during the day. It's corporate religion. And of course, the worst one of all that, now that the other one is dead, is Pat Robertson. He's the worst. Karen is in Ventura, California, listening online. Hello, Karen.
Hi, Mike. I am here.
Yeah,
thank you very much. And I share your concern about the state of our public schools. I think that it is now set up currently so that the public school system will fail.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
I think the goal is to privatize education. I see it happening here where I live. I may tell you what I do. For 15 years, I'm a special teacher who goes from school to school doing social studies, field
mm-hmm.
trips.
Mm-hmm.
And I've seen the change for 15 years. I've seen what has happened. And last year in California, with our huge, you know, problems here with our, state budget, last year, the schools were supposed to close. Schools were supposed to close. Some did, and they became charter schools, which is basically a privatized school,
mm-hmm.
right?
Right.
And what I've seen this year, sadly, is that I've learned that here we are in the last weeks of school, and in a Los Angeles school district, they are putting teachers on furlough
right.
for the week of May 24th to 28th. That's basically the end of the school year. The testing has been done. What is this about? You know, the teachers union have no power to say, no, we're not going to do this. The schools are just shutting down for a week out of the blue.
Yeah. Yeah. It's happening. It's happening more and more around the country. We can blame anyone we want to. I blame the Wall Street meltdown. I blame the corporatization of everything in this country. But when you get right down to it, it's a matter of priorities. The American people have allowed ourselves to be pushed around like a bunch of damn sheep by the fascists, by the corporatists, by the upper 0.1% who don't give a tinker's damn whether a million of us live or die. As a matter of fact, I think they wish probably 20 or 30 or 50 million of us would die. To make it easier for them to get around the country. But it's a matter of priorities. We the American people, have allowed our public education system go right down the toilet. Every time we've gone to the polls and voted no on a school tax levy, voted no to increase increase the millage on our property in order to raise a couple of million dollars for schools, or voted no on a local sales tax when local government said, but if we don't have it, we're going to have to close this down. We're going to have to close that down. And immediately, as soon as the issue comes up, the conservatives, the Republicans who want to destroy everything in this country and turn it over to private enterprise, private corporatism, they come out and they say, well, now, are you going to vote in favor of a tax? Look at this guy. Look at this Democrat. He voted for 164 tax increases over his political career. Maybe he did, and every single one of them was to benefit the public sector. They want to kill the public sector, Karen.
Yes, they do.
Absolutely, and murder it.
Yes, I agree. And, you know, last year what saved California schools was the stimulus money.
Right.
And that saved, you know, thousands of jobs. But now that money is no longer available. And I agree with you totally. Your solution was right on. But think of the money that could be poured into the schools instead of into the military.
It's awful.
You know, 53% of every dollar
right.
taxpayer money goes toward the military. And another thing is they want the kids to fail, in my opinion, in high school, because if they drop out, there are no jobs right now. And so what do they do? What do the kids do?
Guess where they wind up. Yeah.
That's where they wind up.
It is. Karen, thanks. I appreciate you checking in. Thanks a lot. I appreciate what you had to say. 53 cents of every tax dollar. I saw that number the other day. I thought, gee, is it that high now? If we took half the murder budget, which would be $400 billion, and put it into education in this country, imagine, just imagine, that would only leave $500 billion for the murder budget. Oh, my God, how could we possibly survive, right? Isn't it true that if you combine all the other military budgets of every other country that has a military budget on Earth, combine them, compare it to the United States, that we still outspend that combined total by degrees of magnitude, orders of magnitude, I should say. It's not like we spend half again as much. We spend 4, 8, 12, 15 times as much. It's madness. Does anyone think in the Obama administration that the United States is going to succeed at whatever it is we're supposed to be succeeding at by continuing to do this? Is that rational? Is that sane?
As a brick, and the love that I feel is so far away. I'm a bad dream that I just had today. And you shake your head.
Cleaning up America one flying monkey at a time. It's more Mike Malloy.
What, the music die again? 10 before the hour. Gee, we need to get some new mini disc players, don't we? Oh, my God. Couple of emails here. Here's from Epi10. Technology for morons. What's the point? Referring to education. What good is a computer when you can't do long division, much less factor a polynomial? What the hell's a polynomial? What good is an MP3 player that holds 12,000 songs, not one of them by Mozart, Beethoven, or the Beatles? What good is a paintbrush if all you can paint is a ceiling? What good is a high-def plasma TV screen the size of your living room wall when all it's used for is watching American Idol and playing Super Mario? What good is science when you can just shrug the wonders of nature off as a miracle from a sky spook? What good is a pill that will extend human life to 300 years for a population that can't even reach their potential in 100 years of life? Watching this country die is like the scene in Space Odyssey. where Dave pulls out Hal's higher brain circuits. I'm glad I grew up in the 60s. That's all I got to say.
Daisy, Daisy, give me your answer to Dave. I can feel it, Dave. Dave, stop. Stop, Dave. Will I sleep, Dave?
Oh, God. I love that movie. I love that one and The Shining. Whew. Both of them by you-know-who. This is from Ellen, who writes, another important reason the corporatists want to destroy public education is to destroy the teachers' union. Just more union busting. I'm sure you know this and have gotten to it. I just think it's very important to include when discussing the destruction of public education. Yeah, we just mentioned it, Ellen. Minnesota, Ellen writes, has a particularly strong teachers' union relative to other parts of the country with a brilliant leader, Tom Dewar. His grandfather was assassinated in the late 30s for his union activities. Dewar really gets it. Please continue to fight the... I can't say that word anymore, Ellen. The blank power. Thanks, Ellen. Regarding Minnesota, Raging Lefty writes, dear Mike, our dictator, Pawlenty, decided not to give the schools 27% of the money budgeted to them and thereby forced them to borrow funds. This strategy allows Governor Pawlenty to keep his no new tax pledge to the Grover Norquist tax evaders, and has the added bonus of putting our schools into hock for the near future. Pawlenty is desperate to become the next president so he can rule over the ruins of the American empire. No doubt, if he who would be emperor has a chance, he would force Social Security to borrow money so he can continue these filthy wars. Oh, wait a minute, I think that was already done. Raging Lefty. And then he sends me something from the Daily Planet, Newsday. Mary Turk writing. Oh, this was several months back. With Governor Pawlenty's, quote, solution, end quote, to Minnesota's budget crisis mandating delays in payment of state aid, more than one-third of Minnesota schools will have to borrow money to meet payrolls until the delayed aid is finally delivered. That means school budgets and taxpayer money will go to banks to pay the interest on borrowed money, not to pay teachers or heat classrooms. Chris Lianen, Director of Business Services at Bemidji, is that right? School said, quote, our total cost of borrowing is going to cost about $70,000 over the course of this year. Chris Lianen said the school district made the decision to borrow after Pawlenty delayed $1.2 billion in state payments to schools as a part of his plan to balance Minnesota's budget. It is an accounting trick that delays a portion of state school payments until the next budget cycle to balance the current budget. The director of business services, Chris Lianen, said the shift means the school district is coming up short about $1 million a month. Well, it just... this is from Chico? Or no, this is from Dennis. Mike, I'm a product of California public schools. I learned a boatload of stuff, and I make a good living and have health insurance as a result. We also own a home and can pay for our kids' college. I can tell you we are slashing the source of our wealth, our wonderful public education system in California. We are killing the golden economic goose. It's crazy. It's a total downward spiral. Without an educated workforce, the economy dies. My children, however, will escape this spiral, but just barely. It's the kids behind them who will suffer. Reagan started the anti-education movement in California when he nearly ran the state into the ground as governor. We're hoping that Jerry Brown can bring us back from the cliff once again. Dennis. Man. I think that's one of the things that I've said it earlier tonight. One of the things that upsets me more than anything else is to be a citizen in this country, to see the madness that is sloshing around inside our boundaries, unlike anything I've seen in my lifetime. Just utter political madness. When you have a crazy person out in Nevada who is leading in the polls, leading Harry Reid, and this crazy person who wants to be senator is suggesting that you pay your doctor bill with chickens. Use the barter system, she says. Back in her parents' day, her grandparents' day, people used to pay for their doctor visits with a bushel of corn or chickens. And this woman is ahead of Harry Reid in the polls. This is the madness. Why do people not like Harry Reid? Because he's a lousy senator or because he's a Democrat? You know why. We've had lousy senators since we've had political parties. That's where we live. You people in Canada that are listening, you people in South America that are listening to this program, you people in Australia and New Zealand and in Asia, other parts of Asia and Europe that are listening to this program, you don't know how goddamn lucky you are.
Oops.
Watching replay of Rachel's program earlier tonight, Rachel Maddow's program on MSNBC, and she, in the segment she was doing, she was pointing out some letters of complaint from one of the recent teabagger demonstrations in Washington, D.C., and some of the teabaggers were trying to get to a national park outside of D.C. or inside D.C. or maybe in Virginia. Anyway, they took public transportation to go to a national park. And they wrote letters to the public transportation company, I don't know what it is in D.C., complaining that the train cars that they had to ride on were not adequately cleaned. Now, these are people that had gone to Washington to complain about government spending, socialism, and so on and so forth, on their way to a national park on public transportation, bitching about the condition of the train cars. What do you do with that? What do you do with that? You laugh, you cry, you think about the woman who's leading Harry Reid out in Nevada. I hope I got that right, by about 10 percentage points, and she believes you should pay your physician with a chicken. If you don't have health insurance and you're unemployed, take a chicken, or a bag of corn, or I don't know, maybe some tobacco leaves. I don't know. And it's just madness. Mark in Reno, Nevada writes, Mike, I don't quite understand your last comment on Reid. I'm very unhappy with Reid because he's a spineless, and at times I think he is a Democrat in name only. I would appreciate your thoughts on Reid. I'm caught in a dilemma. I'm hard-pressed to vote for this weakling, yet I cannot ever vote for a Republican. Ever been in this position? And what did you do? Well, yeah, I've been in that position every time I've voted for about the past 35 years. I don't know, Mark. I guess what you do is, and I'm not trying to be a smartass with you here. I mean this because this is what was told to me. I've had the same complaint. You don't wait until, 6 months before the voting is to occur. You wait until a day after the votes are counted, and you realize that if you voted Republican, you're insane. If you voted Democrat, you're being fooled once again. So then what you do, if it's a Senate race, you spend the next 6 years either organizing your own campaign or finding somebody with some political experience who is not a Democrat, who is not a Republican, who is certainly not a Republican, but somebody who believes in our political system, who shares your ideas, who is a true progressive or a true liberal, or a true democratic socialist or social democrat, however you want to say it, and you bust your ass to get that man or that woman elected. Now, that's, I realize that's the creepy answer. You know, we're in the age of, if something lasts longer than 2 or 3 minutes, it's an epic. And I understand that. But, and here I am talking about waiting till the day after the votes are counted, then working for the next 6 years to get a real progressive or real, social democrat elected. I don't know what else to tell you. If you're asking me what to do this November in voting in Nevada, I have not a clue. I have not a clue. What have I done in the past, confronted with what you're confronted with? I voted for the Democrat. And you notice that little bit of that little shame sound in my voice. But I'll tell you, they can be threatened to boil my puppy in oil before I would ever vote for a Republican. I don't care what the issue is. I do not care what the issue is. Republicans, conservatives are scum, absolute scum. And they're trying to destroy my country. So, and doing a damn good job of it, aren't they? Huh? Aren't they doing a good job? Yeah, there you go. Chris is in Atlanta listening on XM. Chris, welcome to the program.
Hi, Mike. How are you this evening?
Hey, fine.
I just wanted to chat with you about your views on the public school systems. And first of all, let me tell you that I am a product of the public school systems here in the South. I'm in Atlanta and born and raised in Georgia. And I'm a supporter of public schools.
Mm-hmm.
However, I take exception with your comment about comparing folks who want to send their children to religious schools, you know, and comparing them to the Taliban.
Mm-hmm.
I think that and the other thing I take exception to is that if they voted against a tax increase, a sales tax increase, or a millage rate related to a tax, what would be a school tax,
mm-hmm.
that they're somehow anti-public school. When the reality of it is that we can't trust government to do what they say they're going to do with our tax dollars anymore.
You're a Neil Bortz fan, aren't you?
No, I don't listen to him.
Oh, come on. Come on, Chris.
No, I don't, honestly. I don't think, because he comes on during the day, I believe, and I work during the day.
Well, but, it sounds like what Bortz talks about. In the first place, when you say you can't trust who? Now, say that part again.
You can't
trust government, I think you said.
Well, no. If they're saying that, okay, we want to raise the sales tax specifically for public school,
right?
There's no way to guarantee that they're not going to put that money into the next Atlanta Falcons stadium.
Well, there is a way to do it. It can be a designated tax, and normally it's not sales tax. The sales taxes are usually used to pay for other things, so that school taxes or property taxes can be used not to cover shortfalls. Look what has happened here in the state of Georgia since Roy Barnes was thrown out of the governor's office. Look what Sonny Perdue has done in 8 years. I don't care if a person's Democrat or Republican. Here in Georgia, all you have to do is take a look at the mess we're in. I mean, how did that happen? Well, to me, the way it happened is multi-layered. But part of the reason is because, for some reason, the people in Georgia decided we'd had enough prosperity, we'd had enough low unemployment numbers, we had enough black budgets, we had enough everything. We decided that we wanted to elect an entire slate of Republicans to destroy everything that Tom Murphy and the boys put into effect in the state over 35, 40 years. So here we are. I don't know what to tell you. As far as targeted tax. Targeted taxes, that can very easily be done. A. B. As far as not trusting government to get things done, you and I trust government every time we turn. I mean, you and I can't go 10 minutes without having to trust government of some sort. So I just don't accept that line, Chris. I really don't. Now, as far as religious schools, I've had family members 40 years ago, 50 years ago, who went through Catholic school, and got a good education. I'm not saying that 50 years ago, 40 years ago, I don't know how old you are, but if you went through a religious school, I bet you by God it was at least 35 years ago.
I didn't go to a religious school. I went to a public school.
Oh, okay.
And I'm a product of a public school, and I feel like I'm, you know, fairly successful.
Right.
My fiance teaches in a public school, high school. She teaches special ed.
Right.
We're not opponents of public schools, but I am a proponent of sending my child, and I don't have a child, but when I do, if I do, I want to send them to the best school. And if the best school in my area is not public, it happens to be the religious school down the road, then I think that's okay.
Well, to me, when you say religious school, the first word is religion, not school. So if you want to send your child to a religious school, that's certainly your right. I mean, it's still your right. Eventually, it will not be our right. Eventually, it'll be what we're required to do if the fascists win. But if you send your child to a religious school, the first thing he or she is going to learn is religion, not about religion, but a certain religion. If you send your child to a Muslim school or a Jewish school or a Christian school, that's what they're going to learn about. They're going to learn religious doctrine. The education, whatever constitutes education in the school, will be secondary to the religion. That's why it's called a religious school. And here in the South, and you know this as well as I do, Chris, here in the South, when they talk about religious schools, they're talking about fundamentalist Christian. And fundamentalist Christian really do believe that the entire universe is about 7,000 years old. No thanks. Before I would do that, I think I would homeschool. Chris, I got to leave there. Thanks, pal. We'll be right back.
Because the past is just a goodbye. Teach your children well. Their father's hell. It's
your tears won't leave a trace.
Coast to Coast, The Mike Malloy Show, all substance, no abuse.
It's 21 past the hour. A couple emails here. Before we go back to your calls, this is from Peter. Mike, someday, hopefully soon, the kiddies will be so dumb as to be unemployable. The potholes will be so large that they swallow you and your ride. The rolling blackouts will be so long. And minuscule credit currently awarded to small businesses will finally completely end. Now, someone might ask where the money is going. $1 million for a cruise missile? $5 billion for a Trident? Is this necessary? Then there will be a spontaneous movement to straighten things out. It seems to be similar to alcoholism, where the situation has to become so intolerable that something has to be done. Hang in there. Yeah, I guess so. I guess so. That's why in November of 08, I suggested that people go ahead and vote for Palin and McCain. Get it over with. Regarding war versus education, Claude in New Jersey writes, Mike, how right you are. Just this week, a reporter was on Fresh Air on NPR and was explaining what the Afghans tell the Marines, which is, quote, you are here today, but tomorrow you would be gone and the Taliban will move back in and kill us if we work with you, end quote. This honesty clearly indicates that our efforts to build a free and democratic Afghanistan is totally futile. Of course it is. How could it be otherwise? We are not interested in a free and democratic Afghanistan. We are interested in an Afghanistan that would function the way Bush and Cheney wanted Iraq to function, as a puppet of us or our oil companies. I said something last hour addressed to our international audience about, you know, consider yourselves lucky if you don't live here. This is from Australia. Don't worry, Mike, we are heading toward oblivion too. Our left-wing, quote-quote, government has just approved a uranium waste dump site in Northern Territory, which I presume will pave the way for the world's radioactive waste to be dumped here. Where will all those warheads go that Obama wants to eliminate? This was approved without proper consultation with the indigenous people in the region. The left is like the right, no difference. All will be incorporated. Nothing will be public any longer. More and more repressive laws and the elimination of human rights or equal rights continue to be eroded. The Anti-Discrimination Act in Australia, I believe, was suspended. How racist is that? In order to force indigenous people off their lands into towns. Otherwise, their benefits would be cut off so that corporations can do mining tests for uranium, etc. The scum are in big government and in big corporations and in big media. We may have a better health and education system than the USA, but the USA does have some good EPA laws, some great food control, and animal rights laws. Well, not so great, Paris. Well, at least I can say somewhat better than here. We certainly don't care for our environment here, not by the majority, not by government and corporations. Our man, Mr. Garrett, has turned, sold his soul, etc. He's your prime minister, I guess. But I will stay optimistical. Cheers, Paris in the land of Oz. Oh. And we have a couple more here, which we'll get to momentarily. Chuck is in Knoxville, Tennessee, listening on Sirius. Hey, Chuck. Yo, Chuck. Chuck. Chuck, are you there? All right, Chuck's not there. Sorry about that. These are too long to try to squeeze in now. So, he said as he crumpled them up. Well, no, here, this is from Kevin in Madison. Mike, the banksters were unquestionably sleazy in their handling of the current crisis, but all they did was get in the way of an invisible trend. Kevin wants me to believe it's not the bank's fault. He says, that trend was set in motion by the major corporations aided by Reagan, Bush, Clinton, and Bush. This crisis would have been no more than a bump in the road if real wages hadn't fallen since the Reagan era. It's the devaluing of labor that has crushed this economy. I remember seeing a hidden camera video shot by ABC of all companies of Tom DeLay addressing a group of slavers. Oops, I mean businessmen in the Seychelles. Is that how you pronounce that? Islands. He was telling them how their business model, 12-hour days, 6 days a week, few dollars an hour, no overtime pay, workers in barbed wire and circled barracks, was what, quote, we want for America, end quote. No idea who he meant as we, but it sure as hell did include me. This is back in the late 90s. I've tried to find the clip in the inner tubes, but have had no success. Yeah, the banksters have been real SOBs in all this, but the root cause of the crisis lies at the feet of the multinationals and the politicians, both right and left, but let's be honest, mostly right, who enabled them. Kevin, yeah, I remember that. That was when Tom DeLay, I saw that video too, when Tom DeLay was explaining to the American corporations that had located in the Mariana Islands and being run by Chinese overseers, slavers, who would bring in slave labor. And Tom DeLay was telling these people, yeah, we're proud of you. You're the future of America. You're the future of America.
Resistance Radio with Mike Malone.
I've gotten a couple of requests. I forgot to repeat the address. So those of you who are regular listeners, you know who Marge is. Marge from Maryville, Indiana. We haven't heard from her for quite some time. Got an email from her son today, who lives in San Francisco. Marge is in the hospital, has been for a while. I'm not exactly sure how serious the situation is, but to be, you know, I don't want to ask her son if I can talk on the air about what she's dealing with. I don't know anyway, but anyway, she's been out of touch with us for a long time, and her son RJ remembers when last time, several years ago, when Marge was sick, but she stayed at home, I think, and we gave out her home address, and people sent her get well cards. So he didn't ask for cards. He just said he said that she's always been a big fan of your show, and well, any good thoughts and good wishes you wanted to send out to her would be appreciated. I know how touched she was by the postcards a few years ago. You know, that's about all he said, other than, hi, folks, wanted to let you know that my mom, Marge from Maryville, is in the hospital right now. She's always been a big fan, yada, yada. So I just thought it would be a nice thing to send Marge a get-well card. What the heck? So you send it to her son, not directly to Marge, and he will read them to her over the phone, and then, I guess, box them up and send them all when she comes home. So, in response to several requests, you ready to take this down? The son's name is RJ. This RJ, RJ Johnson. Johnson, no T in it, just Johnson, RJ Johnson. His street address is 2694, 2694, 19th Avenue. 2694, 19th Avenue, San Francisco. And the zip is 94116. All right, give it to you again. RJ Johnson, this is Marge's son. R.J. Johnson, 2694 19th Avenue, San Francisco, 94116. All right? So just a, you know, a get-well card, a Hey Marge card, a funny card. You know Marge's sense of humor. Oh, my God. So, and the weird part is, she's a great fan of the show. It goes back to when Kathy and I, 12, 13 years ago, when we were in Chicago, working for WLS in Chicago. Well, just me. Kathy was in school up there. But that's when Marge started listening. And then we came here, came back to Atlanta. And the only way Marge is able to hear the program now is by calling in and listening on the phone, because she doesn't have a computer. Now, several years ago, when that fact became known, a bunch of listeners said, hey, we'll chip in and buy Marge a computer. But, and she was very gracious in thanking everybody for that idea. But she said no. She just, you know, I'm not sure why, but she decided not to do that. That she would just continue to listen as best she could. So, I mean, if you're in this business, especially on my end of it, you've got to really, really, really respect somebody who's that loyal, that they continue to listen. We haven't lived in Chicago since 2000, 10 years. 10 years. It's been that long since Marge was able to hear us on the radio. And she doesn't have XM or Sirius. And she did not want a computer paid for, you know, with donations from the group or her son. You know, her son would have bought it for her. But, you know, she just said, no, thanks. So she listens by dialing up to talk, and we'll leave her on the phone for half an hour so she can listen. And then, you know, we take her call. But we'd started wondering, just like we got a few emails from people, ironically, over the past couple of days. Where's Marge? Haven't heard from her for a long time. All right. Now, you know. So let me give it to you one more time. R.J. Johnson is her son's name. R.J. Johnson. And send the card to 2694 19th Avenue. 2694 19th Avenue, San Francisco, 94116. All right? Okay. John is in Costa Mesa, California. Hey, John.
Hi, how are you?
Go ahead.
Quick question. I'm get the speaker off.
Yeah, that'd be
I
good.
I want to see how you felt about the way, two questions actually. I want to see how you felt illegal immigration was affecting schools in Southern California, and also what do you think about vouchers for school?
How immigration is affecting schools in Southern California?
Illegal immigration in Southern California.
I don't know, because I don't live there. I live a continent away, so I don't know what y'all are dealing with.
We'll just say we have a lot of illegal immigrants here.
Okay.
A lot of them.
Well, that's, I don't know how to answer it. Here in Georgia, we have illegal immigrants, but we just give everybody a chance to get an education, even though our school system is collapsing too. But it's not, it's not because of, immigrants, illegal or otherwise. It's because, we here in Georgia, like you people in California, decided you didn't want to pay any more taxes, so to hell with it. What was the second question?
How do you feel about school vouchers?
I look at them with a lot of suspicion. They're very suspect to me because if there's no money to rent a public school, where a school voucher? Where's the money for school vouchers going to come from? They come from the government, right?
Well, my understanding is the same place that the money's around the schools. It would just be given to people to direct the money rather than.
Right. But the money comes from the same place. I mean, where's the money going to come? Where's the money going to come from for vouchers? I would rather not see a voucher system because they are inherently, as far as I'm concerned, inherently racist. A voucher is a way for a for a white person to say, I don't want to be around all these non-whites. I use my school voucher and go someplace else.
But it would also be available for, say, a black kid to go to a white school.
Yeah,
you'd ways.
You'd think that, wouldn't you? But have you ever seen it work that way? If you have, good on you.
I haven't seen it at all.
I have yet to see it work that way. But, of course, I live in the South.
I don't know anywhere where they're doing it, actually, right. So I don't know.
So voucher system to me is just another way to undercut or undermine the public school system. If there's money for vouchers, John, it would seem to me there would be money to fund the public school system. The public school system has been critical in this country to everything that we've ever been. It's only been in the past, I don't know, what, 8-10 years, maybe 15, that it started to go into the tank, down the commode, into the sewer system. And I think that is deliberate, and it's calculated, and it's being done by the right wing. That's what I believe. Chuck, thanks, man. I appreciate you checking in. Who's this? All right. Jeremy is in Burlington, Vermont, listening on Sirius. Hey, Jeremy.
Hi, Mike. I'd like to know how we want to go to Afghanistan and change them, but we know that Great Britain failed in the 1800s. They sent in, I think, 28,000 soldiers.
Mm-hmm.
And the Taliban the Afghans let one soldier leave alive. And he was a doctor, and they told him, tell me what we're going to do to your people.
Uh-huh.
We go in, and we think we can win after they and the Soviets lost.
Well, you can go back further. It's my understanding Alexander the Great tried to, on his trip to India, tried to subdue the Afghans. It didn't work. Genghis Khan, prior to or subsequent to Alexander the Great, tried to subdue the Afghans. It didn't work. So, you know, the phrase about Afghanistan is where empires go to die. So I don't know that this craziness about Afghanistan, the original idea was to provide a secure U.S. puppet government in Afghanistan so that, our America-based transnational oil companies would be secure in building pipelines across that country into Pakistan and then into the Indian Ocean to bring out all of that oil and gas in the Caspian Sea area before the Russians got it. So, as far as bringing, excuse me, democracy to a country that's been tribal for about 4,000 years, that's madness. It's not going to change. If Afghanistan does change to a different form of government, it'll start from inside Afghanistan. Is not going to be imposed. I mean, you know, Afghanistan is just the a different word for Vietnam. It's crazy. Go ahead.
Oh, sorry. Go ahead. I was going to say I'm dumbfounded at how our government can look at all these great civilizations that have failed and tried. And I mean, not just failed slowly, but failed greatly at doing what they're trying to do to them.
You'd think somebody could wake up and smell that particular coffee, wouldn't you, Jeremy? Thanks, man. I gotta go. Thanks for checking in.
Destruction can't be easy to defend when all your heroes have abandoned you, or have you abandoned them? From civilians to enemies, bombs can't discern. They just destroy all in their path. Will we ever
10 before the hour. Don't forget tomorrow. We got an email from Laura. An emergency in her family. It's a long story, but we're going to reschedule Laura Flanders. Possibly Friday. What do you think, Kathy? Yeah, possibly Friday or maybe Monday, but we'll have her on the program. Tomorrow and Friday, I've got a two-parter here for you from Bob Alexander, who writes The Moment with Bob, acerbic, cynical pieces for this program that we all love so much. And he's come up with something different that I want to share with you. It was his idea. He ran it by me. I said, yeah, write it. It's a two-parter, about the length. Each part's about the length of one of his moments with Bob. But if you are a cigarette smoker, I desperately want you to hear this tomorrow, okay? Take 3 or 4 minutes for me to read it to you. But if you're a cigarette smoker, I don't care how much you enjoy it. I don't care if you've been told by your doctor you got to quit or you're going to die. You know, just whatever. Whatever your situation is, if you're a cigarette smoker, maybe I should add a little tagline. If you're a cigarette smoker, who's ever wanted to quit? But I think every cigarette smoker somewhere inside their head wants to quit. I mean, how long have we known that the stuff is toxic and it kills us? I mean, it just kills us. And, you know, I don't talk about this very much. I'm a former smoker. And I've said a million times, you know, I quit 8 years ago, but that doesn't mean I'm not going to develop lung cancer because I smoked for a long time. And that's, you know, you roll the dice when you're a cigarette smoker. You convince yourself, not me. and for most cigarette smokers, that's true. You don't die of lung cancer. You die of something else that's brought on by cigarettes. I'm not going to get preachy. I just want you to hear what Bob has written. So tomorrow night and Friday, tune in. I found it mucho interesting. Very interesting. Chris is in Marietta, Georgia, listening on Sirius. Hey, Chris.
Hey, Mike. How you doing, man?
I'm all right. How are you?
I'm good. I'm good. Listen, I started listening to you guys the first day I moved to Georgia from Southern California.
Wow.
I got serious, and I guess I started listening right before Molly was born, and my youngest was born maybe 8 months after Molly was born.
I'll be darn. Well,
and I'm damn near your age, too, so.
Oh, wow. Well, thanks. I appreciate that. So you moved into Marietta, Georgia, huh?
Yep, Marietta, in the heart of...
Oh yeah,
God by God County.
Yeah, I know. I've been in the Atlanta area for about 40 years now, so trust me, I know about Cobb County. Oh my God! But anyway,
yep.
I do admire your courage, or maybe it's perversity. I don't know, but for moving into Cobb County, good for you.
Well, I got a concealed carry permit too.
Just oh, like do you? So. Okay. Well, then you know. Well, hold on just a second. Everybody, you hear this? You hear this? The only reason I have one of those permits is because of what happened to me working in Cobb County. And here's Chris who lives there.
And there you go.
Yeah, man.
There you go. And I am a diehard, I guess I would have to call myself a leftist.
A what?
A leftist.
Oh, okay. You're not a liberal.
No, I'm not a liberal.
No, me either. I used to be a liberal, but I kind of outgrew it.
Yeah, I was a progressive for about 28 minutes. but I do have a comment because I moved here from SoCal.
Yeah.
And I got a comment on, and I'm trying to be kind here, but the idiot that just called about vouchers.
Right, right.
Yeah, if you don't like the fact that there are, quote-unquote, illegal immigrants coming into your school district, try and remember two things. Number one, the original illegal immigrants were the Caucasians that came from Europe. And number two, school vouchers are nothing more than subsidizing people that can afford to send their kids to private schools, because most of us can't, and even with a voucher.
Right, that's true.
We couldn't afford this. So it's subsidizing people like, I'm afraid, probably the previous caller was, who, oh, I want to send my kid to a private school if I only had a voucher.
Right, and a lot of those vouchers wind up in the hands of religious or semi-religious schools, because you know, you live here, you live in this area like I do. The average private school, you want to send your kid to first grade at a good private school in Atlanta, it's going to cost you $16,000 a year.
At a minimum. I had a friend that's paying $22,000 a year.
Yeah, that's madness. And the average voucher is what, $3,000-$4,000? Where is that going to go? Where's that money going to go? It's damn sure not going to go to one of these elite private schools in the Atlanta area. You know, I've college educated three of my adult children. Well, I'm on the third one. And when my daughter, Wendy, went to University of Georgia, it cost me all of about under $7,000 a year to send her, a full-time student, University of Georgia. So I have a son now who's University of South Carolina. It cost me about $11,000 to send him there. First grade, $16,000?
Yeah, I went to University of Florida. It cost me about $8,500.
Well, there you go. Well,
you know, and the thing is, too, is I got to tell you, Cobb County Schools gave the principals of each individual school the option of hearing Obama's speech.
Yeah, I remember that. Yes. Yes.
Yeah, and so my daughter's school, the principal said, no, it'd be too disruptive.
It's disruptive.
And then a week ago, the principal comes on every morning and gives the students a math challenge. And they said, okay, how many letters are in the name of our former great president, George W. Bush? That was the math challenge question.
Listen, I'm going to have to go be sick. Chris, thanks a lot, man. We're flat out of time. I got to go. I hope you call again. Thanks for being such a good listener. I appreciate that very much. I'll see you tomorrow night, folks. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy.